C-SPAN is probably best known for streaming congressional hearings, or my personal favorite, the British Parliament and the Prime Minister's Question Time.
Yeah, they have a good time there. C-SPAN's also known for its author interviews, and over the past 25 years, Brian Lamb has interviewed almost 1,400 guests for the show's book notes and Q&A. Brian Lamb's also the founder of C-SPAN.
Brian Lamb's interviews are in-depth, they're thoughtful, and in that sense, they go against the grain of much of what's on TV these days. When I got a chance to talk to Brian Lamb earlier, he explained what he enjoyed most about the job.
Learning. When I interview someone that has a lot more knowledge than I do, and that's almost everybody I interview about a subject, it's just great fun.
And, you know, you can sense that fun when you're watching C-SPAN and watching some of your interviews, and a number of them come across in this book. What's one of the more memorable interviews you feel like you've ever done, and maybe a favorite from the book?
Well, I'd have to say that interviewing Christopher Hitchens over the years was memorable, and in particular, the last interview I did with him, which was about a year before he died, and I'm not sure he was interviewed after that.
I have to practice staying alive and preparing to die at the same time, which, as my memoir says, is actually what one has to do all the time, as a matter of fact. I mean, you're never more than a breath away. But it's a bit more vivid to me now, sort of doctors in the morning and lawyers in the afternoon.
I had known him, not socially, but I'd known him well. He'd been to our studio 25 times that I'd interviewed him over the years. And he was always very provocative, no matter what he said. And I remembered him because he also could tell a good story. He'd been all over the world. And he was, I don't know how to describe him. He was just free form.
Hmm. We actually had him booked here, and he ended up canceling on that tour. And so I was reading about, you know, his decision to cancel and how they had to make an announcement about it. What is it about him, or what makes a good interviewee, in your opinion?
Somebody who's willing to give, and what I mean by that, if you interview a lot of politicians, they're so programmed that you're not going to learn much beyond the sound bites that they want to give you, and I get it. I understand why. So when you interview somebody that's got a story to tell and they're willing to give you as much as you have time for, it just makes it very interesting.
Brian Lamb is C-SPAN's chairman. He's the founder, and he's also the face that you've seen on TV asking the questions. His new book is Sundays at 8. And you also include a number of interviews here on the 2008 financial crisis. What was your goal in some of those interviews?
Well, in my time doing this, and I've been in television most of my life and C-SPAN for the last 35 years, this financial crisis in the last, six, 7 years, was very complicated. I mean, you kind of understand war. I mean, it you know, nobody likes it, but you understand it, and it's one side against the other. And although this last few years has been very confusing with the terrorist mentality of some people in the world. But the financial thing was language that we'd never heard before if you were a generalist, and I consider myself a generalist. And the people that are included in the book were people that got right to the nitty-gritty. There was an awful lot of greed involved. There's a great deal of disgust for what's going on in the New York-based financial world. And it took some real experts to try to explain it to us.
Right. Credit default swaps, not easily digestible. You know Brian Lamb from C-SPAN. His new book is called Sundays at 8, 25 Years from C-SPAN's Q&A and Book Notes. And I think when people bring up C-SPAN, sometimes they bring it up in contrast to other networks. They'll bring it up in contrast maybe to CNN or to something like Comedy Central, because interviews have gotten kind of so crazy. And I'm wondering, you know, just what your sense is of how C-SPAN is different, how you're different.
Well, C-SPAN is more like a service than it is a television network. Television is, in most cases, is now today meant to be entertaining. Even in the news has become entertaining. There are some awfully good journalists in it, but in order to get the kind of ratings they need to make money, as the audience has become more and more dissipated or gone to so many choices, that it's harder and harder to hold an audience. We have the luxury of not having to be rated. We never know how many people are listening or watching, and we don't have advertising, and we don't have stars, and we're our mission is basically to let people see these different events without commentary, without analysis, and just be a part of what is an incredible smorgasbord of choice, whether it's NPR or whether it's CNN or MSNBC or Fox News or all the different channels that are out there.
Say a little bit more about how it works for folks that aren't familiar with it. Why does CNN have the luxury to be able to do these hour-long book interviews like the ones that you've done for the last 25 years?
Well, C-SPAN was created by the cable television industry back in 1977. We went on the air in 1979. We came along before CNN, and they were looking for something different in the way of choice for the audience. People today have no memory that we only had 3-4 channels in a community. And it wasn't until a satellite was launched back in 1974. Actually, PBS and NPR were the first ones to use the satellite. And then in 75, the RCA satellite was launched, and that's what cable glommed onto. And Home Box Office started transmitting nationwide. And we came along as the number 6 new idea. It wasn't an expensive idea, but it did serve a public need, and the industry was willing to fund it back then and give it a try. And that was the genesis of C-SPAN, and it's still operating the same way today. We're a lot bigger. We have 3 channels. We have a national radio service, and it still has the same mission, though, to let people watch and listen to events without getting involved in any way in the substance of it from the standpoint of C-SPAN employees.
And it seems to me that the kind of interviewing that you're doing, that long format interviewing, is, you know, becoming less and less prevalent as the media landscape changes. I wonder what your thoughts are about why it's changing and what the future is.
I think it's pretty simple, David. I'm not sure about this, but I sense it. I feel it. I've been doing these interviews since the network was created. And people have a much shorter attention span unless there's a, you know, unless it's a sporting event that or a movie that has a lot of drama to it. People like the drama. And what we do is not drama oriented very often. It is more information based. And I noticed that in a lot of the other shows on television, including Charlie Rose, has he shortened his interviews often to 3 20-minute interviews instead of 1-hour interview. I don't know. I mean, I think it'll come back. YouTube has an enormous amount of this kind of thing on it, and podcasts are very popular with certain people. I think it's the choice, and people now can get about just anything they want, and as long as we're allowed to do what we do, we'll keep doing it.
Well, just to wrap it up, I mean, what do you see as the future of C-SPAN and its role in this kind of increasingly frenetic media landscape?
I really don't know. There is no reason at this stage to think we won't be there, but you know what's going on and watching how things are changing. Our financial base is directly related to people's monthly bills for either this cable that they subscribe to or this satellite they subscribe to. We get 6 pennies a month per customer, and it's enough to create $65 million a year for us to run the networks. But I have no idea where it's all going to go, but we're going to keep trying. We're on all the platforms. We have the, you know, you can watch us on the iPhone and the iPad and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know what it'll be 5-10 years from now. I think we're constantly talking about it, though, internally, and hope we can figure out a way to keep our revenue stream coming in. But, it's not a guarantee.
Brian Lamb of C-SPAN, he founded it. He's the face you see on TV doing a lot of the interviews. His new book is Sundays at 8, 25 Years of Stories from C-SPAN's Q&A and Book Notes. You're listening to The Record on KUOW.
Coming up in the next hour, why you want to take pictures in front of a red background. Psychologist Thelma Lobel tells us why.
Plus, we're going to be talking to Vaughn Palmer, as we do every Wednesday. He's got news from Canada.
Dave Beck, remember him?
Yes.
He'll be back talking about the American Symphony League of Symphonies, which has its annual convention in Seattle.
Fantastic. Also, we've got a story. The word misogyny is under dispute, exactly what it means. Some people think its definition needs to broaden. We're going to talk to word maven Ben Zimmer about it.
Love
that.
Ben Zimmer.
Yeah.
All that and more coming up in the next hour on The Record here on KUOW. Stay with us.
Support for KUOW comes from Sound Credit Union, where every member is also an owner. Sound has 21 full-service branches from Olympia to Linwood, all staffed with real human tellers. More at soundcu.com. Sound Credit Union. We never forget it's your money.
Good afternoon. It's 12:59. News update just ahead. KUOW FM Seattle, KUOW Tumwater, KQOW Bellingham, and Digital HD Services.
Tight budgets have spurred prisons to release elderly inmates, but these lifers say the transition is tough and some need a mentor, one of their own.
A lot of guys don't have a true understanding of what we have done to our victims.
The search for redemption after life in prison, today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
You'll hear that and much more later this afternoon as part of KUOW's afternoon news magazine. It begins at 2 p.m.
Support for KUOW comes from Alaska Airlines, with up to 270 nonstop flights from Seattle every day to more than 70 destinations across the country. Destinations like Los Angeles, Philadelphia, and Honolulu. Learn more about nonstop service at alaskaair.com.
. 62 degrees in Seattle, expecting to reach at least 69 this afternoon. And we should get some sun along the way as well. It's going to be cloudy overnight. We'll dip down to 52. And then tomorrow, Thursday, mostly sunny with a high of 71. I'm Bernard Ouellette. It's a minute past 1 o'clock. How sensations affect your behavior, emotions, and thoughts. 20 minutes from now on KUOW 94.9 Seattle. News and information.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The backlash over the circumstances surrounding a POW's freedom from 5 years of Taliban captivity is stoking debate on Capitol Hill. Georgia's Saxby Chambliss, the top Republican on the Senate Intelligence Committee, wants President Obama to declassify intelligence assessments of the five Taliban detainees who were released from Guantanamo in exchange for Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl. NPR's David Wellner reports Chambliss says he's seen the reports and now the American public should as well.
Senator Chambliss says he'd opposed releasing the five Taliban detainees because of the threat they posed. That's why he now wants top secret files on them made public.
You can't undo what the president has done. And I think the long-term potential for damage is enormous.
But Majority Leader Harry Reid defended the president on the Senate floor.
Opponents of President Obama have seized upon the release of an American prisoner of war, that's what he was, using what should be a moment of unity and celebration of our nation as a chance to play political games.
Reid added that the nation is glad Sergeant Bergdahl is home. David Wellen, NPR News, Washington.
But the excitement expected over Bergdahl's homecoming is anything but. People are angry with Bergdahl with allegations that he may have deserted his Afghanistan post. Well, in Haley, Idaho, Mark Lagulo, whose son was friends with Bergdahl, says there is a time and place for everything.
I just think that we need to let those that are in charge deal with it. And in the meantime, just accept someone home that has been lost for a while.
Lagulo has heard on Northwest News Network. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel is urging the American public not to jump to conclusions on Bergdahl until all the facts about the soldier are in.
It's not in the interest of anyone, and certainly I think a bit unfair to Sergeant Bergdahl's family and to him to presume anything.
Hagel speaking in Brussels, where President Obama has been attending a working G7 dinner. Blanket security across the Chinese capital appears to have succeeded in preventing any commemorations of the 1989 Tiananmen Square massacre. NPR's Anthony Kuhn reports from Beijing that dozens of dissidents were arrested in the run-up to the event.
Police carefully checked IDs, searched bags, and screened tourists heading into Tiananmen Square, and they kept foreign reporters out. Television screens in China carrying satellite feeds of CNN and the BBC went blank as soon as they aired reports about the anniversary. Online, any references to June 4th, the pro-democracy protests, or the military assault that ended them were blocked or deleted. In contrast with the enforced silence on the mainland, tens of thousands of people in Hong Kong continued a tradition, holding a candlelight vigil in the city's Victoria Park. Anthony Kuhn, NPR News, Beijing.
Before the closing bell, Dow is up 15 points at 16,737, NASDAQ up 18 points, S&P 500 up 4. This is NPR News.
And this is KUOW News. I'm Kim Malcolm. Former Seattle City Councilman Peter Steinbrück, who supported the election of Mayor Ed Murray, has won a $98,000 no-bid consulting contract with the city. Murray brushed aside any suggestion the contract might be political payback. He told the Seattle Times that Steinbrück was qualified to help him revise city growth plans and improve how departments work together. Steinbrück is an architect who spent 10 years on the council before leaving in 2007. He now works as an urban planning consultant. This time of year, young Northwest cougars are getting kicked out of the nest by their mother cats. That means many of these young adults are looking for their own home range. But these rookie hunters are in a cat-crowded field. As correspondent Anna King reports, that sometimes ends in trouble.
Rich Mann is an enforcement captain with Washington's Department of Fish and Wildlife. He says there's been several suspicious kills of sheep and goats near Yakima and Ellensburg. Mann says just like college kids having to figure out how to wash their own clothes and get enough sleep, young cougars have to learn to sharpen their hunting skills and where not to hunt. Often, young cats are trying to avoid larger, older cats, and they are forced towards more populated areas and farms. Mann says if you see a cougar or a fresh kill, back away and call the state.
So if you find a kill like that, especially a fresh one, there's a good chance that the cougar's still in the area. So leave it alone. Don't, you know, become, I guess, a threat to their food source without calling us.
But for the most part, Mann says cougars stay well out of humans' way. I'm Anna King in Richland.
And Planned Parenthood says it's closing three clinics in the Portland area, including one in Clark County, Washington. The organization reports a 30% drop in patient visits. The Oregonian reports that's in part because of increased